Right, good evening everyone and welcome to this community of well-being. Can I ask, when you're speaking, if you could put your mics on please, because sometimes the acoustics in this room aren't very good. So, and also can I ask to switch your mobile phones off as well please. Thank you. So we'll take the first item on the agenda, which is the minutes of the meeting of the 21st of March. I hope you've all had time to read them and you're quite happy with them. Are there any conflicts of interest or anything that anybody wants to mention? Can I sign them, please?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay, thank you.
Right, Jackie, apologies, please.
Councillor Barron, substituted by Councillor McEwen. Councillor Rose, substituted by Councillor Carter and Councillor Leeson.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Thank you. And welcome to the two members that's not normally on the committee. Yeah. Public question time? There's no? No. Councillor Sessions? No. Members' item? So we're on item 5A, yeah, which is the Health and Care Overview Scrutiny Committee. We haven't had a Health and Care Scrutiny Committee at the county since our last meeting. It was held a couple of days before our last meeting. And the reason it was cancelled, really, was because the item on the agenda was Wallace Quarry, one of the items, which is quite a political operator, shall we say. So because of the general election, as I said, we decided to leave that until after. So it's going to take a place on the, I think it's the 17th of July. So if anybody's interested to come along to listen to that, it's on the 17th of July. So, and as I say, going back on reflection, you know, the items aren't there really, are the dentistry, the doctor's appointments and that. Still not what we've talked about and we're still progressing with it. You know, so I'll bring you up to date at our next meeting in September, and we'll talk about that when we get to the end of the meeting about the date change. Right, so I think it's the next item is the calling items, and we've got nothing called in. So we're on item number 7. So can I welcome Sam to the table, please? I think are you and Anna as well doing the presentation. So disability facilities grants.
Sharing with another council was a really good thing to do, really efficient, But for Cannock, it just wasn't the right time for them to make a change, having already made one change to come back in-house. So I'll just kind of take you through a little bit of context to set us up around DFG, just for anyone who's not heard from me before or not heard in a lot of detail about it. Disabled facilities grants are a statutory duty of the council, so we must approve and we must pay any application that's properly made. I've put up there some of the legislation that we refer to, so the top one is the original DFG grants legislation. We're also able to host a local policy around what assistance we give. So the mandatory duty is for a maximum grant of £30,000, and it's to adapt people's homes to make them safer and independent where they live. But under our local policy, we can be more flexible with some of the needs that we might take into consideration and some of the ways in which we would use that funding that just bends us away from the legislation to really localise the offer that we make for residents. And that policy is made under the Regulatory Reform Order. That's the second legislation. It is a means-tested grant, so we do look at people's financial resources to determine what they might receive. And it's available to people of all tenures, so it doesn't matter if you rent or own your home or you're in social housing, there are grants available. A key point is that landlords can also apply to us to adapt properties on behalf of their tenants. We receive the DFG through the County Council through the Better Care Fund. So it's a ring-fenced allocation as part of the Better Care Fund. We're told every year what our allocation is. And then it comes through the Better Care Fund and the County Council passport that to us. So we have an agreement with them that says we will spend the grant in line with the legislation. The need for DFG locally, I think is really, really significant. And there's a lot of data behind why that is so relevant. I'm sure many of you are not strangers to some of these phrases, an ageing population. It's one of the things we refer to. There are becoming fewer working age adults in relation to older adults needing care in Stafford Borough. So there's a dependency ratio there where people are more reliant on those who are working, and those who are working need to work and care at the same time. There is a gap between growing life expectancy, we're all able to live longer, and healthy life expectancy. There's a period of time in our lives where we can no longer expect to do the things that we once did, and to be safe, to be independent and free to live in the way that we want to live. There's a high number of people claiming disability benefits in Stafford compared to nationally, which gives us an indication around complex conditions and the limitations on people's lives due to disability. And I've mentioned housing affordability there because I think sometimes people imagine, well, you can just move to something more suitable. You can just go to a bungalow or get a ground floor flat, and it really isn't that simple because housing affordability doesn't always allow every one of our residents to be able to just chop and change and live somewhere where they can manage better. So it's a really needed service to be able to adapt the homes where people are living. So just looking back a little bit at what happened before we made that change to come back in-house. So this is the service delivery 2018 to 23. That was the 5-year contract with Millbrook Healthcare. What these columns are showing you is the allocation at the top each year of how much grant Stafford Borough was given. And then the blue bar shows you how much of that Millbrook were actually able to utilise. So you can see that the performance was not where we would have wanted it to be. Because it's ring-fenced, we do still have that capital, so it doesn't go away, but we want to use it. We want to adapt people's homes, we want to make a difference and not just sit on allocations. Towards the end of the contract, Millbrook did start to improve somewhat on their delivery. There's some reasons for that that we've discovered since they finished. I think trying to pick off quick and easy adaptations that they could get through and leaving the more complicated ones behind. So that was a key reason, a key indicator of how we can tell that the performance wasn't where it should be. And the other thing that we monitor really, really closely is the amount of time that it takes for someone to come from their initial inquiry to the Borough Council, which is not the start of the journey for many people. The start for them could be diagnosis, it could be starting to struggle, it could be talking to the GP. They come to the County Council for adult social care services. like a holistic triage, and if there's small things they can be helped with, or if they need a care package, that's considered. But then there comes a point where the physical environment that they're living in is seen as the barrier and the big problem, and that's when the inquiry comes to us. So we measure our DFG timescale from that point because it tells us about our service, but it's not the start for many people, and I'm sure they can tell you that themselves. The end point then is when the works are completed and the grant is paid. So with Millbrook, that was a rising timescale. Obviously, COVID had an impact. We know that works were suspended for a period of time, but they were never quite able to recover. And that final figure there is 325 days from inquiry to grant completion. So that's nearly a year, which really is not something we were happy with. We did do an awful lot of work with Millbrook, I have to say. This was, you know, not 5 years where things were still out to run on. There was a partnership there. There were six district and boroughs in this agreement, and there was constant support, monthly meetings, one-to-ones, supporting with works contractors, supporting with staff recruitment and retention, trying to be flexible around policies. Ultimately, the options appraisal showed that the best thing to do was bring that in-house, reduce the size of the partnership, and for Stafford, working with South Staffordshire at the time, was a really good idea because we have in common a housing provider, Homes Plus, and a huge proportion of the people that come forward for adaptations under DFG are in their stock. So having our council stock under Homes Plus in those two council areas lent itself to working together with those three partners.
John, questions on the roof? Or
can we take them at the end?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Please, if
yeah.
Let Sam finish and then we'll take questions at the end. Thank you.
Thank you. We set out a vision for what we wanted. We obviously spent a lot of time reflecting on what Millbrook did and learning from that. And these are some of the things that we wrote about what we think a quality DFG service should be. For me, it should be really easy to find, really easy to access. You should get the information in plain English about what you're entitled to and what's going to happen, how long we think it's going to take. We should be honest about that, and we should always be trying to utilise our allocation to help as many people as we possibly can, to meet as many of their needs as we're able to, and just to do that quickly, and obviously to keep in mind this is public sector, this is public funding, so to do that in a compliant and transparent way as well. Those are some of the key things. So, the next slide is my best one, so just brace yourselves for this, because the performance highlights for last year are what I really came here to talk about. All of this is just history up to this point. I'm really proud of the team that I work with day to day, because what these stats won't tell you is how patient and empathetic they are, and how passionate and how deeply they all care for the people that ring us and ask for help. So last year we completed 125 adaptations. That was 106 residents who received grants. We do count them differently for different reasons, so I've quoted 125 because I'm sure you've seen that in our performance packs, but I count people as well. It was always a long-standing target with the budget that we have that around 100 people a year should benefit, so we've exceeded that. The total expenditure was still slightly under the allocation. I don't know if you can see on the other bar chart because it was very small, but it's roughly 1.5, so it's a smidge under. And it was that to come to 84%. What I'd say is when we started on the 1st of April, we'd had no crossover with Millbrook. They finished on one day and we received their data on the next. We'd been able to do some recruitment, so we had some staff on day one. We only had one member, 2P, because they were so under-resourced. We had to have everybody else in brand new. So all those staff needed to be trained and inducted and go through a probation period. Need to get to know DFG in some cases because they'd never come across it before. We had to get to know each other and all our computer processes and systems. So 84% of budget spent is in contrast to approximately 80% of actual capacity. If you take the people we had in 365 days and you look at how long of that year they were actually able to run at full speed, it wasn't 100%. So they did really well to spend what they did in the time. The average end-to-end time is 350 days for everything. That's your bottom figure. So Millbrook left us at 325. Everybody that we picked up from them, that average is 350. So it went up slightly. Obviously, we had that transition. We had data to transfer and manage some expectations and redo things that they had done. But when you take a look at the people who came to us brand new from their first inquiry on the 1st of April, and then you look to see how long it took us to complete their adaptations as brand new people in that year, the average on time times 141 days. So those things for me are a massive mark of success for what the team have been able to achieve in terms of the spend and how quickly they can turn things around. I said before that I'm really proud to work with them because of their empathy and understanding. And we collect customer satisfaction survey information, which is something that wasn't taking place before. The big blue lines are for answers where people gave are very satisfied, where they were offered very dissatisfied, dissatisfied, neither satisfied or very satisfied. So the vast majority there were very satisfied. A few people gave us answers that we don't like so much, the other colours. But looking into the data behind that, we asked people about the information they were given, the explanation they had about the process, how long it took, how much choice they got. A lot of their comments reflected on what happened before we took over. Things took too long because they were without predecessors and their cases were complex and they didn't understand and they didn't know how to move them forward. But I think that shows you a picture really of where the majority of people are. So this is the team. Anyone ever rings through to our, we're 619486, it's on the website, and anyone can ring us. They're most likely to come across these people first, the caseworker assistants. Sue's from Liverpool, Abby's somewhere, Wolverhampton, and Linda's from Southampton. So we've got a range of accents that you can pick up on. Those ladies will contact people who've been referred in to us within 3 or 4 weeks of that referral arriving, and they're often met with comments of, "Oh, I didn't expect to hear from you so soon, I was told it would be months." So they're the start of the journey, and then we have caseworkers and technical officers who will work through the application paperwork and designing and speccing and getting quotes and helping people through every element that you can need to go through before you get funding approval, and then a thing is built and it gets paid for at the end. So caseworker assistants can do things like our stair lifts very, very quickly because we have a good supplier contract where they can just get a quote and they deal with it all without much input from anyone else. Your technical officer, Joe, right at the far end, he is going to be looking at big build stuff, wet rooms and garage conversions, extensions, though I have to say we try to avoid those where we can because they're cost prohibitive. But that gives you a bit of a spectrum really of what the officers are dealing with in terms of the type of adaptations. We continue to work in close partnership with a range of outside agencies as well. So you've obviously got Stafford and South Staffordshire there, who are the two main parties to this shared service. Homes Plus, I mentioned before, we can welcome landlord applications. So now if we get someone who is a resident in a Homes Plus property, then we can refer them on to Homes Plus. And that means that someone who is a surveyor in Homes Plus's team can consider if they were on a bathroom maintenance programme and might automatically be moved on to getting a shower room instead. They deal with minor works very quickly. If you need a little rail, a bit of path smoothing out, they can do that faster than we can approve a grant and do that in DFG. But then what they can also do is design DFG-funded adaptations and send us the application to approve and pay. It means when they do something like a wet room, they're going to use tiles that if they do a tenant repair, they're going to use the same tile and we don't have a mismatch. They're using suppliers and contractors that they already have on tap. So it filters out some of the demands that we have so that people aren't all waiting for the same contractor pool that we use. There's more to go at. And it means for those people, they can contact their landlord and they can keep that application going with their landlord and have that relationship instead of trying to figure out who we are and what they do and who they have to ring to get which bit. Obviously, I mentioned the County Council in terms of getting our referrals and their OT services initially will identify some of the needs for people. And of course, kind of changed because of those shared services. Now we are more established, we're able to look at Cannock and think about some of the ways that we can continue sharing things with them, like procuring contractors, procuring contracts for the suppliers and things that we need, and being more efficient about that. And I mentioned all of the other districts and boroughs that we were previously working with in Cilis because we are all on a bit of a journey. We've all been on it this last year. So staying in touch with those peers who are doing the same thing as us has been really, really useful. And I'm leading a district group, so all the lead officers like myself, running DFG and the other authorities, we come together and there's just more and more opportunity to streamline things and not all be doing the same work multiple times. A little note on service demand, it's going up, that's the bottom line. I mean, I started with that context about our population and we have definitely seen a slight but sustained increase in referral volumes. Now this year government have increased our allocation slightly, so it's now 1.6 million for the year. So we know that through Better Care Fund there is a national commitment to disabled facilities grants and adapting people's homes and helping them stay where they are. A couple of, I mean these are really statty bits, you'll probably get them in your packs, but here we've got the number of applications in progress is the red line, so that's been steadily going up through Millbrook's tenure and it's just taken a drop from where they left it to where we got to last year. You've got the number of approved cases at the bottom and then you've got the number of completions in green. So that blue line is tracking the top of the green. The green's saying everything that we've finished, but the blue one is saying whilst we were finishing building this over here, we've got another application on the way over there and we approved it, we just didn't finish the building work by year end. And that to me shows a real head of steam that where that team got to full capacity and started to work at pace. By the time we got to March, we stopped counting and called it a year, but all those approvals spill over and actually most of those are built now as I stand here today. So it's just a reflection really of how the year went. This one shows an annual cumulative number of DFGs completed compared to a quarterly target. So previously the quarterly target was fairly even throughout the year, and last year I adjusted that target to show we expected to achieve a small amount early on because we were going to be new, and more towards the end, and then we surpassed that target overall. So it's another one to show that the pace of delivery just went up and up and up against the target. Resident feedback. We capture all comments, complimentary, negative. Obviously we take the odd complaint, and I have to say we've had no formal complaints in the last year and lots of lovely compliments from people who tell us how much the adaptations change their lives. We've got a couple new ones today actually, and it really gives the team a buzz and it keeps them going. So I hope perhaps I can share this slide and you'll be able to read those because they are quite small. It's still been a learning year, we've still got more improvements to make, we're not there yet, it's been great, I'm standing here and feeling quite proud, but there's a way to go. We want to review our policy because through actually delivering it, which Millbrook didn't, they stuck to statutory stuff, we've realised there are areas where we could use our resources better, where we're perhaps not helping in the way we want to. We want to try and do some more prioritisation and not rely on data referral. We want to think about how people's needs affect who should go in what order. Obviously keep an eye on our resources. Under Millbrook we paid them a percentage fee to run adaptations for us, and then we did some benchmarking when we came in-house and we said that we would make sure that the cost of running our service stayed below 21% of the annual allocation every year, or 21% of the budget spent ideally. Millbrook charged 16%, we came in at 17% last year. So I think the more efficient we are, the more we do, the cheaper effectively we'll end up being. We want to put a bit more information out in terms of leaflets and visual things to help people, because we still recognise there's a struggle to understand what is this, what's this process, what's going to happen. And ultimately we want to reduce the pipeline because that demand has gone up, we inherited a backlog, we've made a really good head start on it, but we accept that there are still people who've been waiting from their start point, not ours, for longer than they should have been. So those are the improvements that we expect to make over the next year.
Well, Sam, that's very comprehensive. Thank you very much indeed for that. That's really interesting. Can we please send a copy of the slides to everyone, please?
Certainly.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Right, I mean, I've just got one question, really. You know, we talk about Housing Plus. Do you ever talk to Housing Plus about building homes as they are building, you know, about adaptation, you know, homes that don't need adaptation? So, because I don't know there's a shortage of people that needs these sort of homes. I mean, I visited one in my division with a party out on, and it had been actually built for that lady in the wheelchair. She could do everything on her own, but she was constantly in the wheelchair, but she could live on her own because of that. And I just wondered if you had any contact or do you have any discussions with Housing Plus about that?
Yeah, we have had. We made quite a bit of progress in helping Homes Plus to understand what a beautiful layout would look like.
Mm.
They had some architects doing some work. So that now is an asset that we've helped them with, is to have, you know, what size, what features and functionality. I always talk about really obvious things like getting the door widths right, so anybody can get through them. Putting a bedroom adjacent to a bathroom with a wall that can be knocked through. That means if someone needs hoisting at a later point in life, you can just help them go from bed to shower or toilet and back again. So we've given them quite a lot of information, and they have worked up some plans. Obviously, I think the challenge of building houses goes on from there, but we know that we've helped support that asset that they can take forward should a scheme become viable.
Thank you. I think it's probably, looking at Brendan now, I think it's probably planning and that, you know, when they're building new houses, something we should be looking at through the planning department. But I'll put that on the strong side. Has anybody got any questions? I'll start off around Louise.
Thank you.
Can you put your speaker on, please?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about the
individual that needs the support to initiate the request, or where's the requests come from? Because I'm thinking a lot of people who may well be housebound with difficulties and things like that wouldn't be in a position to know how to make the request.
Yeah. We receive referrals through Staffordshire Cares, and they call that the front door service. So it's the front door to adult social care, to all kinds of care packages, social workers, therapists, occupational therapists, physio, things like that. So the bulk of our referrals come through that because that's how we channel them. But before they get there, it can be doctors, you know, GPs, nurses. We do try and educate people and talk to them about what the DFG is and what that route is to come through Staffordshire Cares. So they can actually come from anywhere. We spend a lot of our days talking to sons and daughters, friends and relatives, and giving them the advice that they need to get into the system.
Okay, thank you. you. Sorry, yeah, go on, Brendan.
Oh, sorry, did you want to go first?
No, go on.
It's a statement rather than a question. I'm very pleased that this has come back in house. My one and only experience with Millbrook was not one that encouraged me that they had. I had no faith in their ability to deliver this one particular project in Hickson to the point where the plan that they produced was inaccurate in terms of size and scales. And layout, it was completely different to what was the reality on the ground. So I'm very pleased to come back in house.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marnie.
Hi, Sam. Can you tell me how are you working out the level of importance, who you need to speak to first, who needs the most help first? How do you come to the kind of conclusion that you need to help that person before that person?
Okay, so most people are taken in date order. If they've come through the front door at Staffordshire Cares and they've gone to the community OT team, occupational therapist, that's often because they've got complex needs and occupational therapy are working with them in a range of ways where only one is an adaptation through DFG. So those people are really qualified to tell us what the level of urgency is for that individual. So we can take a steer from there. They can explain to us what the challenges are, and we look at risk. We look at the risk to the individual of falling, of being isolated, of their health conditions worsening significantly or rapidly, and rapidly progressing conditions. There is some local authority guidance that's a national document, and that does refer to things like living alone or being dependent on another carer who is elderly or disabled, people with severe cognitive dysfunction where they might not be in control or able to make good judgment decisions for themselves. So we try to refer to the guidance and the clinical information that we're receiving up front to make an initial judgment. We have a further occupational therapy assessment that looks in great detail at the daily activities of living in the person's home with them in terms of all the things that DFG can fund. So at that point, our OT, who's looking at what DFG needs, is they will point to us where there are areas of urgency. So when I said before, we've got this many people but that many adaptations completed, it was because if we get someone who's a falls risk, we can do a stair lift so quick, we'll do it and call it one run. And then we'll work on maybe the bathroom adaptations that take a bit longer because we've eliminated a risk and we've put that first for them.
So through you, Chair.
Yes.
Okay, so when you're talking about stair lifts being put in, what kind of turnaround period are you talking about? I have got a reason for asking this question. So when my husband had cancer and he went through the various routes that you need to go through, and we had some adaptations put in, handrails and things like that, and he was having a stair lift installed, but they ended up by turning up 2 days after he died to install it. So this is my question. So obviously there must have been a priority. How do you make that decision whether that person who's dying is more eligible to get that equipment in their house before somebody else? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm really sorry for your loss. Thank you for sharing. It's a challenging decision. It's not one that comes easily, and we don't always get it right. I'll put my hands up to that. We do rely heavily on clinical judgment from occupational therapists to tell us where those risks lie, and we have to be sensible about whether or not that adaptation is going to reduce or remove that risk. In some instances, it might make someone's life easier, but if it's not removing a risk because their needs can otherwise be met or on the ground floor of their home, we wouldn't put them in front of someone who has no facilities on the ground floor. So it is very much a case-by-case referring to clinical judgment and guidance at the same time.
It's a very difficult position to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a fun place to be.
Sure.
Can I just bring Emma in, Andy, first, please? Thank you.
Thanks. So my question is actually like quite a specific bit, might be extremely easy answered, and it just happens to be that you're here. So a resident contacted me who can't be discharged from hospital without handrails being fitted into their home. So they're at Royal Stoke Hospital and they can't be basically discharged from hospital without adaptation to their home. Is that something that, like, once they've kind of gone through the clinical route, would end up coming to this scheme, or is that something that would actually be dealt with slightly differently by social care?
Because
they're really lost, yeah, they're really lost
this.
To what happens.
It
so it shouldn't
be
that perfect. Because I was thinking that it is this, and I didn't want to say to them, yes, it is or no, it isn't.
Yeah,
no.
Front door, Staffordshire Care's front door, and I'll make sure that telephone number comes with the slides.
Because at the moment they're thinking they're trapped in hospital because they can't afford to make the adaptations to their home, so they're just trapped essentially.
Just if you want to get in touch with me directly about the individual, I'll give you all the options.
Brilliant, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I thought that had
Andy, do you want to come back in? No?
Louise has got something about
the first. Is that alright? Just to answer my question. In response to AMAG, you should be able to get an OT service to help you.
Yes, and well, that's what I think that they said, the council might charge you, and they were like, they don't have an income, so they were like, I don't think it would be charged, and I said, no, I don't think that's the case.
It's a separate company that the OT is doing.
Okay, thank you. Did you want to come back? Does anybody else want to speak?
Sorry.
Go on
It's a bit of a statement more than an observation rather than a question. But you were talking about new houses and the situation. Last year was a different hat on, 21. I went around several new housing developments and they had got as a standard wide doors which were capable of wheelchair access, front door. So it seems as though the builders are taking on board the fact that they won't have steps or anything like that, but they're adaptable first for that, and that's how they're actually building houses.
And did you want to come in? You don't mind me calling you by your first names and not councillors, do you?
No, absolutely don't mind. I just wanted to say it's just great to hear how well you've done this, how successful you've been in such a short space of time, because we had so many meetings when we were hearing that the group that were doing Millbrook, they were just failing. And it's just something we can be proud of, isn't it?
Does anybody else want anything to say or ask Sam? No? Okay. Sam is the same work for us all. Thank you very much for all the work you're doing and your team as well. So take our thanks back to the team as well for what the work we've done. Thank you. We'll move on now to item number 7B, the quarterly year end performance report. I think Hannah, are you coming back to the table, please? Sorry. And I think Jack is also giving you the KPI business objectives as well, which you can,
That's part of the same.
You put part of the same thing. So we'll take what you've got attached to your agenda first, we'll go page by page, and then we'll do the bit that you've been given today. Okay? Right, so we'll start on page 4. If anybody's got any queries on there. Can you just give us a little bit of insight on turning point, Anna, please? Now that's working.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
This is the new accommodation that was opened earlier this year to support rough speakers. There's 6 of them accommodation, so it's full, with many support needs.
Can you just turn me back a little bit? That's better.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, is that better?
Thank you.
Yes, so the property now, Turning Point, is operational. It's fully staffed and it has all the residents living there. The residents who have moved in have a number of very complex needs. So many of the old streets are all 10 years across. So it is going to take some time to be able to really work with them to make sure that the
But I have to say, what I've seen to date from the provider is absolutely excellent. They have, it's Turning Point. They have worked really closely with each of the residents to address their needs. They have built up really, really strong relationships with all the support providers, with the statutory agencies, to ensure that support is fed into the property to be able to work with the individuals on the needs that they've identified. There's been an excellent programme of co-production as well, from when the residents were actually still living on the streets, about how the house would work, how it would operate, how it would be designed, how they wanted to live there, so that they absolutely invested in the property and feel part of it and own it as well. There are weekly setbacks. There are numerous instances that the provider manages with confidence and in a really, really successful way. They learn from the incidents and they move on from them. And I think it's a provision we've wanted for so many years, and staff have recognised the need is there. The early few months have been hugely successful. We have other agencies not recognising the residents they've worked with for many years because they're looking healthier, they're looking fitter, they're engaging in a different way. And everything so far was really, really positive. What we've also got from the other supported accommodation providers is really good practice being shared. So we've got other supported accommodation providers saying, I haven't thought of trying that. If I work in that way, things will be better. And it is really, really good to see the good practice being shared across the different agencies. The voluntary sector is seeing an impact. The police are seeing less incidents. They're being called out to on town because of the fact that the residents are more stable in accommodation. So I think everything we've seen so far is really positive. Day to day, we recognise the complex needs are still there and they need to constantly be addressed. But everything we're seeing is really, really positive, and it's a great service. It's absolutely great service, and I think all the partners are really beginning to see the impact it's having.
Thank you very much. How many residents are in there? Sorry. How many residents are in there? Anna?
There's six residents.
Six, yeah. And where is it based?
We don't want to share that. Really.
Thank you. That's fine. Anybody else have any questions? I'll go this way. Yeah. Yes, Julian.
Yeah, which is the one you put on?
The bottom one.
It's not working.
It is.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on this. I mean, I'm the Forpitch ward councillor, which covers the town centre, and I've visibly noticed, shall we say, over the last 9 months, people sleeping on the street, you can see it's gone down. It's most visible. And I think we should congratulate Aaron and the team on this.
Journey back into general needs accommodation. So it's probably a bit more of a complex picture
than just doing four units.
Yeah.
It's always slightly different types and different complexity.
Moving people along.
We've got a similar scheme, well, we've got a scheme exactly like that, but the YMCA in the state of Virginia.
I know it well, yes.
Yeah,
it's a really good system.
Yeah.
It is. Where you've got people that are brought in, put into a sort of hostel situation, but then they're moved out, aren't they, to more independent living, and eventually they go on to have a small house, don't they?
Absolutely, yes.
It's really been successful, it has.
Mm.
So you're looking to sort of develop it in that way?
We have move-on options from Turning Point. We're nowhere near that yet, but that is what we are looking at the moment. I think the question you raised there is one to be in a person's accommodation, and that is something that I really do want to move forward as well in partnership with the County Council over the next year.
Mm. Mm. Thank you. Dean, your question.
Thank you. I appreciate it's quite a transient population, but roughly, on average, how many rough sleepers do we have in the town at the moment?
I couldn't tell you this week, but the team do know pretty much on a daily basis, and weekly we monitor the number and we work with all the different agencies to work out who's where, who are vulnerable, who need to do additional checks on, things like that. The numbers fluctuate on a week-to-week basis. I think the last price was 5, but that could be out of date, that was probably 3 weeks ago, so it does vary a lot.
Anybody else? Marnie.
Thank you. Actually, Dee asked one of the questions that I was going to ask, so that's good. What are we doing at the moment to look after the street homeless in this weather?
Okay, we recognise that the heat is equally as dangerous often as the cold. We work really closely with House of Bread. The partnership is much closer than it previously had been as well, so we're doing a lot of joint working together, and we're out there with them quite often. We understand that they are aware of those that are on the streets. We work with a number of different partners, including the police as well, to check on people and to make sure everything's okay. We know where they all are, and we are able to do checks there as well.
Thank you. You mentioned about working with the County Council for Young People. Can we have a conversation outside of this meeting about that? That would be quite interesting.
Absolutely.
And I put my safeguarding hat on.
Yes.
Thank you.
Andy. Yeah, it's highly commendable, what's that? It's comforting to hear something so positive. But is there a risk that it could be a victim of its own success with people coming in from outside the borough saying, actually, there's a good deal to be had in Stafford?
Okay, Housing Options works on a district basis. So we have duty towards those who are living within the district. So we will support those. I think Turning Point schemes only six rooms in a shared house, and we wouldn't be attracting rough sleepers in because this is a good offer. We have plenty of other people who are on a waiting list who could potentially move into Turning Point or into different options as well. So you know, we're not publicising it as come here because we've got a great offer at all.
Louise?
Apologies, as I'm going to have to use layman's language, so I hope you understand my question. My question is, you're talking about six residents that's been homed and it's reduced the police work. What percentage decrease would that be? Do you understand my question?
I absolutely understand the question, and I'm just waiting for the data for the police. They are putting that together at the moment.
Fantastic.
Anybody else got questions on page 4? Can I just mention at the county a few weeks ago, we had a presentation from the VAB clinic in Burton, and we found that very interesting, actually. There's a young man came, he was 37 years old, and he actually told us his life story about how he'd gone down the wrong path with how he'd gone down the wrong way with drugs and everything, and he nearly lost his leg with injecting with heroin. And he stood there actually and gave his life story, and it was really enthralling because at the end of it all, he's pulled himself back with the help of the back clinic in Burton. And it was really good to see him now with a job and moving forward and that. And this is what I think you're trying to do with Turning Point, to try and turn people's minds so that they're on the right road, if you like, to make something of the life instead of wasting it. So thank you so much for that, Anna, and that's, you know, thank you. Right, we'll move on to page number 5. Anybody got any queries there? I mean, can we... I think there's been a lot of talk over the last few months about the grass cutting in the town and about how it's looking and about how untidy and everything. But actually speaking to, I think it was Greg Stott actually about it, I understand that, and we all understand about bad weather we've had. So if you want to come to the table, Lee or Josh or... I understand a lot of people have been complaining about how untidy the grass cutting looking and what have you. I think what people's got to understand, we've just had the wettest winter since 1835, and you know, so the people in street scene have not been able to do the job that they wanted to do and that. And I think now we're getting the better weather coming along. And of course, they got the equipment, and the equipment cut the grass, and it left all the lawn. So it laid everywhere. I mean, my phone and emails, you know, everybody was complaining about the state of everything. But tell me if I'm wrong now, because I'm told now that we're going to probably move forward. We've got the lovely weather, we're going to get the places tidied up, and everywhere's going to look beautiful. So, and all right, are we having some new equipment or something? What? Can you just enlighten us on that, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll let Lee come in on the equipment and things, but just to say that you spot on and you just answered pretty much how I was going to answer. We have had an awfully wet winter, followed by an awfully wet spring, as you recall. We had a really poor Easter, and we really have struggled to cut grass. It didn't grow for a long time, and then suddenly, as soon as you've had some warm spell, it's grown, then we've had more wet weather, etc. We just copied, but we could have 30 machines on the go, and there was no way we could keep up with it, to be honest with you. The length of the grass, we were getting wet and then dry, and stop getting on top of it. That's paying for another issue. The fact that when we try and cut it with our current machines, obviously, it doesn't cut well enough, you know, around the garden, so it tends to flatten it out. First cut's always a bad one anyway, because we end up losing the pumps, especially as long as so residents don't see that, unfortunately. But we're always on catch up. We tend to always play catch up at the start of the season, but the start of the season tends to normally be late April, early May. This year's been a lot later, so we've had that extra growing time because of the wet weather. So we've reached up. I've been on the compost day, waste compost day, talking to colleagues from various councils across the region. And some national councils as well across England that were there, and we're all saying we're all being battered on our grass cutting. But rest assured, we are going to be getting on top of it. If you spread the holes out, you will see a difference in a few weeks. But again, it's something we normally always tend to get, but it's normally early in the season, so it doesn't get a chance to grow as badly as it does. Mm-hmm. And then this time we've been battered. Lee, you want to come on the machines and the mowing and sowing protocols?
Thank you.
Yeah, so we thought last year was the worst year we had with wet weather, and this year really took us by surprise. So last year we did buy two different pieces of kit that's a bit more capable of cutting the longer grass. To kind of do that as a bit of a trial, though we're quite confident they would do the job. And they've been out and cut some of the very long areas of grass. So the replacement program we're working on at the moment is... a number of things, vehicles as well, but in relation to the point that we were discussing here, we're looking at a couple more bits of kit as well. We'll be able to get out there and cut this longer grass, because I think the seasons, unfortunately, will probably carry on in this way. So rather than having just the two pieces of kit we've got now, which can deal with that longer grass, we'll have at least four, hopefully next year. I'm working on that at the moment. And then also the point that Josh made about the mowing and sowing protocol as well. We've done quite a bit of work at street scene about where we cut and how often, if there's areas that we can perhaps keep a little bit longer so we can enhance the biodiversity of the borough. We've had some issues with long grass at Hetchel Road Cemetery, for example, but I've been there, back there again today and can see the cuts have really started to make a difference, and some of the biodiversity work we've done there is really excellent. If any of you have ever been down there on the new side, as we call it, the side close to the retail park, planted quite a long strip of wildflowers there, it does look fantastic. So that all links to a Roman Serving Protocol, which you're working on now. It's quite a big job, the size of the borough, the areas that we cover. The purpose of this document will enable us to include which areas we mow and so, and how often, and it will be under review. So we do appreciate the support of elected members and residents through forms of an area. If you think actually you could do this a bit more, perhaps you won't leave this a bit longer, residents don't use it. We do appreciate and rely on a lot of that intelligence from elected members and residents. So we'll just make that point that if there's any areas you do have a concern about or any suggestions, please don't hesitate to get in touch.
Thank you. That's on a real negative note. On a positive note, the flowers have started to look lovely in the town and that, now you've started to put them out and that, so we'll have a lovely looking town before long. And the Samaritans, actually, the flower bed that you've put in Victoria Park, I've not seen it myself, but I've been told it looks beautiful, so thank you for that. Right, Brendan, yes.
Thanks, Jack. As one of two people responsible for maintaining the Dixon Millennium Green and cutting the grass thereon, I can empathise completely with the issues that you had this year. It was like a job at the end of April, and I think it was only last weekend we managed to get it down to anything that looks half decent. So, yeah, I was leaving on that. I wish we had your equipment as well, but we've got to push on, sit on lower and one push along.
Thank you for that, Brendan. And again, you know, looking at that and the litter picking and that, we've got to say a big thank you to the people out there that's keeping our streets clean and tidy and that. The number of litter pickers that we've got throughout the community.
Just come in on the same point that we were talking about a minute ago.
I'm sorry?
Are we moving on to something? Are we moving on to?
No, we're still on page five.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we're still on page five. So I think we've got to say a big thank you from the borough and from this committee, actually, for all the work that's been done out there and helping keep the place tidy. Right, Dean.
I think Marnie was first.
Right, Marnie, sorry.
Thank you, Dean. I might ask the same question. I appreciate the problems that you're having with the equipment. However, the residents don't understand this. And as Anne said, we've had a lot of emails with disgruntled residents in specific areas. I know some areas of Stafford are looking better than other areas of Stafford. And where they were not mowed properly in the first instance and then have been left to grow, they're looking particularly untidy. And when I say that, I'm talking about the fact that nobody has come along after and strewn any areas. So we've got street signs that are completely obscured by long grass. Not long grass from the first time it was mowed. It's still that same grass from that time that was failed to be cut or strewed when it's been cut this second time. So instead of having something that's this long, we've got things that are about that long. And that is not really to do with the equipment and more to do, I think, with the fact that some of the cuts are not being scrutinised, some of the areas are not being scrutinised, and some are looking really quite neglected. The meadows is one area that I can think of. I'm sure Councillor Nixon will probably, and I apologise for stepping on your toes, I'm sure you're going to raise it, but Coton is looking like nobody cares. It's horrific, absolutely horrific. I drove through it today and I was astounded at the state it was in. I know that the grass had grown to about half a metre and then it's been cut, and as you say, some patches have been left where it's not been mowed correctly, so you've still got massive lumps of grass there. But again, all around the street signs, the lampposts. It's like this. It's appalling, absolutely appalling. Why is nobody going and trimming these areas after they've been cut?
I think Lee, do you want to come in and answer that? Nice question.
There we are aware, and some areas aren't up to the standard, like to be a lot less, because as we've just discussed, but also sometimes, given we've only got two pieces of kit that would deal with the longer grass, sometimes we make a judgment call, which may look quite right, but I think, well, maybe some of our other kit could do that, and we end up clogging the machine, it's not quite done as we would like, and then as a result of that, it does start to look a mess. Even when we do get it right, when the cut is performed correctly, as it was later starting this year, the big clumps of grass really do look unsightly. They eventually morph, they eventually go down. I know that's a different point to what we were just asking. But even with the first cut with our appropriate kit, sometimes it can still look a bit of a mess. So it's a backlog, as Josh said, but we're trying to work through. All we're saying is report it to us, inform us. Sometimes the land isn't ours, so sometimes residents will come to us with an area of grass that actually is in the council's responsibility. Sometimes it's about that fact-finding mission. But any complaints, any requests, as I said earlier, just please let us know. We don't want elected members or residents being frustrated. Mm-hmm. And also we are happy to draft replies as well to residents and support you with a reply to explain the reasons as to why things may not be as the resident expects at that moment in time.
Thank you. Do you want to come back?
Yes, please.
So the lack of streaming, is that down to lack of staff?
Well, as I just said earlier, you could have double the workforce and the volume of work and the backlog there. We would still, you know, take a bit of time to get round. The other issue is as well, sometimes the grass will be cut or it'll be streamed, so it might be the other way around. And we think, well, we'll go out there 2 days' time, 3 days, and the heavens open again, and it puts us back even more. So sometimes it doesn't quite work exactly as we expected. So the resource is the same as it has been for a number of years. And as I said, if we doubled the workforce, we'd still have the backlog, we'd still take a bit of time to get around. And the environment is something we have limited control over, unfortunately.
Thank you. I've got Dee to come in. Dee?
I'd like to say actually thank you, because when I've raised anywhere, it's been done within the week. And also on the biodiversity, if you go along Rising Brook or you go the new bypass, I think it looks brilliant. I like the way that you've trimmed the edges and left the middle, because it really, really is helping biodiversity. And it looks so lovely because the flowers are coming through. And the fact that you've just cut the edge, people know what you're doing, and it's and the comments are brilliant. So thank you very much, it really helps.
Josh, do you want to come in and answer that?
Thank you, Chair. It's a little bit like Marwood, to be honest with you.
Yes,
residents either love it or hate it. They've got trees in the back garden.
Yes.
Don't mind those trees unless you're in the back garden. But yes, it is a little bit like Marwood. And going back to what Lee was saying, we have got a limited resource, and unfortunately we can't get around everything. It is difficult, but again, as Lee said, if you do have any issues or you've got residents that aren't happy, let us know. We will try and help you with response, and we will try and get on to you as quickly as we can.
Thank you. I've got Louise next, and then you are.
Thank you. Two questions, please. First question, when is the grasses problem in Kenya's going to be rectified? Second question, we've got trees on Charney Park that are between 1 and 2 years old, and I know the community were doing their best to make sure they were being watered, but it is exceptionally hot. And do the trees still need to be watered to that extent, and is there something that can help us deal with that? And I don't know when that needs to be done. Do you understand what I'm asking? Can you water our trees, please?
Well, do they even need watering?
Depending on how well they're established, probably not at the moment. If it's a longer spell, potentially, if they're brand new, possibly, but again, it's about resource, and you will always lose a certain percentage. bottom of bed that we purchased with some climate change money that we've got to do some trees that we've got there. So we can perhaps look at doing that. Some,
so they will need to be watered.
Possibly, well, depends how long, if this carries on for weeks, if you have it, we have it like a 1976 dozer, which I remember 1976,
I don't remember that.
A 1976
I don't remember that.
Yes, summer, then okay. Possibly new trees, we would lose some new trees if we weren't careful. But hopefully they won't help. I mean, you're looking at a couple of weeks in the space of what's been probably the wettest start, the wettest 6 months of the year that we've had for a long time. But again, as Lee was saying earlier, this is going to be a pattern that potentially is going to continue into the forthcoming years. So, I'm sorry, I missed your first question, Councillor.
I think it sounds like the water question is the biggest, most difficult question. How can I deal with that?
Well, at the moment, I don't think we need to water them, if I'm honest. I think it'll be okay because it's only, you know, trees are very, once they're established, they're very good.
And you think
lots of trees manage to self-set themselves, so they're self-setters, so they'll drop, you know, the tree will repollinate and it will drop a seed, and then that seed will grow up and, you know, from just literally being on the floor. So they don't need a, you know, we try to intervene. I think as human beings, we like to try and nurture things and grow things, but sometimes nature will do its own thing. Fingers crossed.
Thank you. Anne, who wants to come in?
I wanted to say thank you for participating in No Mo May. I like the tram lines around as well because it does explain it to people. Lots of people have asked about it in Manor Ward. And it's useful to say to them, which I've done, and some people don't care, but some people do, and it's, you know, they're happy with an explanation, that we've lost 90% of wild flower meadows since the 1930s, and the pollinating insects are really under threat. So it's really important that we see grasses and flowers growing in, you know, in these areas. And sometimes you cut an area, and I thought, oh no, don't do that one. And I wonder how to stop you, you know, when I see wildflowers growing naturally and then you've come and cut it, you know, you need to let me know. But I'd like to say, you know, thanks for the effort that you've made, really.
Thank you.
And also another thing is that you've stopped using that, or I think you contracted out, but you used to use a very strong weed killer along Newport Road at West Clare, and it wasn't any good for the trees at all. And so, you know, and that's when we are getting more stuff that needs trimming, and it's probably as a result of that as well, isn't it? But we don't need these very strong weed killers because they will kill trees long term, but also they're really bad for wildlife.
Thank you. You made me concerned now, Josh. I'm just thinking, Josh, about those 65 trees we've planted at the beginning of the year. I'm thinking, I hope they're all right. You know, I'm going to go and check them, thinking about watching them and what.
It's a couple of weeks. Trust me, I think by this time next week, we'll at least have one rain show.
All right, what were
you
about? Okay, do you want to come back, Marnie, on this page?
Yeah, I just wanted to just talk about the litter pickers and litter groups. I really appreciate the work that's been done. I appreciate the fact that people are now getting recognition for doing this, whereas initially, before Stafford Litter Heroes, there were just a lot of people that just went out independently and litter picked. And, you know, the fact that now they're recognised groups that are doing that, I know it is making a huge difference. However, some of the bins are creating problems because they're not being emptied, and so there are some issues with these groups having to go and collect litter because people aren't able to actually put it in the bin or they're coming out of the bin. If you look around some of the bins around some of the schools in particular are appalling. Obviously we all hate the whole people putting poo bags onto little piles on top instead of taking home, which is, you know, ridiculous and the responsibility of the dog owner. But what's happening with the emptying of these bins? Are they on a, is the cycle slowed down for going in
things.
Did you want to come in there, Lee? Oh, Josh, one of you. You know, my message to everybody is take it on with you. You know, it's
been the cycle hasn't slowed down. We've got approximately 1,500 bins across the borough.
Yeah.
So it's quite a task to get around, but the cycle certainly hasn't slowed down. All I say is, if it hasn't been already, just report it in. You know, some of these bins are only emptied once a week. If we need to do more, we need to know about that. If people need to tell us, you know, when we've got a resource to go out and check every day, do we need to review that? Do we need to empty more? If we can have pictures, examples, locations, then it's something we can have a look at and review. We don't know what we don't know. If there are bins overflowing, we need to be made aware of that. And Chair, as you quite like to say, it would be nice, wouldn't it, if people actually
just
saw the form bin, didn't put the litter on top or around it, and just took it home or took it to the next bin.
Would you consider looking at potential, I don't know, QR codes on bins to allow residents to just scan a QR code and report immediately, as opposed to that people go home and forget, don't they?
Yeah. They do, Chair, yes. To be honest, I started a couple of years ago, a scheme in Canon trying to identify all of our bins. We've probably got around about 700 kind of chase that we look after. But again, same problem across all local authorities, I think, trying to keep on top of the litter, etc. One of the issues we tend to have with a lot of them is some residents in some areas fill them with domestic waste and other waste as well, and then it takes your capacity out. But yeah, that's certainly something I'm interested in developing here, is a QR code, because it would help us as well. Because again, you get a photograph and you're thinking, it's always a close-up of a bin, you're thinking, right, what's the building behind it, where is it? Is it that one, or is it somewhere else? It can be a little bit of a nightmare. So yeah, a QR code on a bin with a GIS mapping layer would be absolutely great, and that would help out our mobile worker app that we've got as well. And again, I've spotted a couple of bins that have been overfilled. It's like, where they've actually destroyed where this is. So yeah, for that.
Right, I think we've talked about rubbish long enough now, so we'll move on. Thank you. So we're moving on to page 6. Anybody got any questions on page 6? Page 7. I've got to say to you, I don't know, anybody ever got any questions? I've got to say, I attended the Shakespeare last night, and I've got to say, it was, so did Anna, I believe. And it did make me laugh. I thought the second half was actually better than the first, but it was really good. And the atmosphere in the Gatehouse was wonderful, you know, especially towards the end. And I thought it was nice where they got audience participation on the stage. It was really good. So, yeah.
Got on the telly as well,
didn't
it?
Pardon?
Got on the television last night.
I don't know about that, but yeah, it was brilliant. So thank you to whoever organised the production and everything. So anybody else got any queries on page 7? Sorry, page 6. I'm still on page 6, I don't apologise.
No, I did move forward to page 7, it's okay. On the support promote community health and wellbeing to all residents and businesses, the venues, lawn space venues that have opened up around the area, I appreciate the fact that they were opened up to combat problems with heating, etc. Have these venues, or are these venues supporting people in the cold, in the warm weather as well as the cold weather? Because not everybody is able to.
A number of venues are still operating anyway, so our summer officially ended at the end of March, but a number of them are continuing either the same scheme or a slightly different one. What we're looking at the moment is the valuation of the warm space scheme, the amount of funding we can possibly get, and whether we can continue it, starting slightly earlier, recognising the point you make, that it's not just about people going somewhere to have a warm space, but it's the social isolation.
education issue and that's how we think about that, as well as the heat as well. So absolutely, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Page 7. Any questions on page 7?
I mean, my understanding is we've got real good air quality in the borough, so you know it's not a problem. So has anybody else got any questions? No? Page 7, page 8. On page 8, the bottom item, 2.4.3, what are the complaints that you've been receiving on? Oh, sorry, it's Victoria, I do apologise. Victoria. Yeah, at the bottom, you see 21 new complaints. Just wonder what they were.
Generally, they are related to neighbour disputes, antisocial behaviour in residential areas. We did get a couple about busking in the town as well.
Right. So, yes. Brendan, did you want to ask a question?
Thank you, Chair. Picking up on the antisocial behaviour reports, in where I live, there is a mixture of private property dwellings and housing association dwellings. One of the housing association properties is causing immense problems to everyone else around. And the housing association concern doesn't seem to be taking the issues terribly seriously. Certainly there's a distinct lack of action. Do we as a council have any authority over this?
And what we can do is, it used to be called the community trigger, but it's called a case review. So if it's something that we've not been aware of, we can support with that. If you can discuss our weekly vulnerability hub, but if a victim is unhappy with the outcome or with action, the threshold is that 3 complaints have to have been made within 6 months. But to be honest, if somebody calls the case review, we generally hold a multi-agency meeting anyway. But that's what we do, we hold a multi-agency meeting, look at what's been done and what else can be done.
So through you, Chair, if I may just add then, there's certainly a well-documented record of complaints that have been made about this property to the Housing Association. And police have been involved on several occasions to calm matters down and even arrest one of the persons there. But the Housing Association does not seem to care, in my view, about the other residents around about this property. Last week, they're obviously running a scrap metal business from this property and they're cutting up washing machines on the front drive. Mechanical machinery.
Okay, this is one that we're already aware about, but yes, so we have vulnerability, well, we have, it's called vulnerability hub, but we do discuss ASB, we discuss all sorts of problem cases in that every week, and we will pull together whether it's additional teams from within the council, but we have around 29 partners that sit on this meeting, so between us all, we can problem solve. We'll make sure that the appropriate agency is taking appropriate action.
Thank you for that, Brendan, because I have the same sort of problem. One of the houses are exactly the same thing, you know, so it is a nightmare trying to get it sorted, and it's just going on and on and on. It's taking not just weeks but months to get cleared. So, Victoria, please do your best you can on those issues. Thank you. Andy.
Thanks, Chair. Antisocial behaviour, are we talking out of philosophy?
Midland Heart.
So it's a really general question. If I've got an issue with Housing Plus, do I go through yourselves to take it further?
Okay, if I could answer that one. We have a contact who we can filter council complaints and issues through. They are really good, and we usually in a relatively short space of time. So if you want to send details to myself, I can either give you that woman's name or forward the contact to myself.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for that. I can reach it. I'm the same. I think we know the person that she's talking about at Housing Plus. And I deal direct with them, and they are, you know, quite responsive. Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? Louise? Have you got your hand up on here, is it? Sorry, I thought you were holding your pencil. Sorry.
1 on 2.4.2 and 1 on 2.4.3, please. The first one, I've got some extra information to give you for assistance with the domestic abuse policy, but I can't get it to you until at least the 1st of July, so please could you bear with me on that. It's coming, I've just got other deadlines that are getting in the way, so apologies for that. 2.4.3, echoing what Brendan and Pam is saying. Yes, I've experienced the same thing, and from what I can see, it is about drugs and it's about people not necessarily coping with pressures that are happening at the moment, and it's knowing how to best, housing, apologies, I get the name wrong, I'm not sure if it's Housing, I think it's Housing Plus, isn't it, along with the Women's in Clogo. They've been really proactive and helpful and positive about trying to do things moving forward, but it sounds like quite a significant problem at the moment, and as you are, I've also been speaking with the House of Brethren, and I think it sounds like it's to do with people having coping strategies to deal with what's happening at the moment, and the adults not necessarily coping, perhaps in some instances children doing the sorts of things that adults would be doing because the adults aren't coping. It's a hard nut to crack, and my heart goes out to you trying to deal with it.
I think we do, when we're dealing with antisocial behaviour as well, we always look at the root cause. So, understanding that we've got to address the antisocial behaviour and support the victim, but quite often there's underlying issues with the perpetrator of that antisocial behaviour. So, we do work with agencies as well to wrap support around that individual and see what we can do rather than just stopping the issue temporarily and it restarting. We do very much look at the root cause and trying to address both issues on both sides.
Marnie, did you want to come in?
Yes, thank you. 2.4.2. I'm not sure if this has been written correctly or whether I'm just reading it wrong. To ensure that the authority adheres to its statutory responsibility in respect of the prevent, safeguarding and domestic abuse duties, right. I see that you've training and awareness has been rolled out and safeguarding policies up to date. How does that actually manifest in reality on a day-to-day basis with staff and those that are being affected by these issues? How does the training actually help our residents?
So it's about staff and elected members having awareness. So I appreciate that elected members have recently had the safeguarding and the prevent training is due to come out. We just didn't want to do it all in one go for you as well. But it's not about making you an expert and being able to deal with that, but it's about recognising the signs and the symptoms and then being understanding where you can refer to or go additional advice and support to residents.
Brilliant, Jen. So are you're able to help, I assume, residents that come to discuss with members of staff specific reasons that they've come to see you for that are not related to domestic abuse, but recognising the signs allows you to then signpost them to help and assist them through the training, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, brilliant.
Did you want to come in, Adam?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know the staff in my teams regularly use the training for Safeguard and Prevent and the awareness they've had around domestic abuse to be able to do competent safeguarding referrals. They know when to refer and when. decisions. If they think they're maybe not getting the right response and they're still concerned about a person, the training gives them that confidence and fixed team in particular support at the other teams to be able to advocate for an individual. They know where to refer people to get the best advice and support possible, really. So I think on a day-to-day basis, I see the teams using it, and I can actually catch the fact that it's effective. We always can do more training and different training, as well as always something else to look at that is used every single day.
Mm. Amy, did you want to come in?
Yeah. Can I ask what provided safeguarding training is for elected members? I'm assuming that I haven't had any because I have biannual, but twice a year safeguarding training and annual prevent training, so I've received a link to the training for elected members. But presumably that's because I confirmed that I already had a standing safeguarding training certificate.
So if you provided that, then you didn't have to.
Yeah.
So you can hit a couple of councillors.
Yeah.
Right. But we use the county council the safeguarding board just because it's consistent and we're working then at Pan Staffordshire and within the partners. We're using the same.
Just for you, Chair. I know that it's not necessarily always convenient for us to do this for elected members, but I think perhaps every couple of years it might be that the Stoke and Staffordshire Safeguarding Board do a really excellent in-person training where you can discuss particular scenarios and things with elected members, and I think that that might hold some value if we could potentially do that, not necessarily annually, but perhaps every 2 years, just so that elected members are together. I know that we always want to think the best of everybody, but when people are busy and they're doing and they're learning to do, they don't always give it their full 100% attention, particularly if there's other pressing needs, which is why, obviously, in education, we have in-person safeguarding training, and you do in kind of other public sector kind of facing roles that require that. But I wonder if perhaps every 2 years we might do an in-person training for safeguarding board, because I think that's a really valuable opportunity for people to kind of get under the skin of signs that they might see as elected members, but perhaps you wouldn't see as staff members, just to kind of give people a few scenarios that they might not feel comfortable referring or identifying some of those particular signs of abuse and neglect in the community.
I'll take your point, Emma, and you know, I mean, it's something that we can look at, but safeguarding, really, the remit for that is under the County Council. You know, I sit on the safeguarding committee, and believe you me, it is a very, very,
Just to comment on that.
You can come back.
Yeah. It's not about elected members having a statutory responsibility for safeguarding. I originally inquired about safeguarding training when I was elected and to whether members had it, because of the different complexities and needs of the residents that we encounter. So not about us having a statutory responsibility, which we don't have, but about us being confident and comfortable with identifying ways to refer people that might be vulnerable in terms of our residents and people that we interact with. So not about us having a statutory responsibility at all, but about us being really comfortable and confident knowing what we may encounter with some of our most vulnerable residents who we support as elected members. And I think that there is value in having that in-person training, not additional levels of training, but that introduction to safeguarding training in person. I do still think there's value in that.
I'd like to listen to the officer's comments on that, as to what you've...
I absolutely agree. I think in-person training gives a real awareness, and it makes the scenarios come to life, and equally the discussion between councillors can also be really useful in such events, so I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's something we can look at then, and if you could put that down, yeah. We've got that in the minutes, and thank you for that, Emma. Right, anybody else want to say anything on page 6? I just want to mention the conversation with Victoria, and she knows about it the other day, just to make people aware that monkey dust is prevalent in Stafford,
yeah,
not just Stoke-on-Trent. So I just want, you know, if you've got any knowledge of anything that you find that you're going about your daily lives and everything, anything that you can pass on to Victoria might help you in your job. Is that okay?
Yeah.
You don't mind me mentioning that, because I think it's something that we should be aware of. Because it's nowhere in the country apart from Stafford and Stoke-on-Trent. Don't ask me why.
It's manufactured, isn't it, in Stoke? Manufactured illegally in Stoke. That's
sorry,
Brendan. On the question of drugs.
I think we'd all need some of that tonight.
I've been picking up in the last few weeks in Hicks, a little sachet with a profile of skull, the skull on the side of it, and it's called Chef or something. It's obviously some drug or some prescription. When I've approached some of the young people who have been under the influence of this, they're completely off their nut. You can't rationalise with them at all. But I just wonder, what is it? You haven't seen this. It's a section through a skull, and it's got Chef written on the bottom. I did send it to them. They said it wasn't a drug that was known to them. But as to what it had
that
taken.
I don't know.
First manufactured in Hickson, though. Right, shall we move on then? Thank you for that. So we're moving now on to page 9. Any comments from anybody on that? On page 9? Again, this is a discussion. I'm sharing this with the committee about with Emma about the problem with the county about children leaving care when they're coming out of care and moving into housing. And this is something that Anna and I are quite concerned about. Well, we're not concerned, we know it's happening and we want to make sure we're doing the best in the borough, you know. So that's another ongoing issue. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. Right, on page 10. Any comments? No. Page 11. Any comments? Right, we'll now move on to the little extra bit that we have given tonight. I've got the page numbers on, so it's L13, business objective. Have you all got time to have a look at this? So I've got the first page, L13. I'm on to the next page, which is L16, starting R16. Any questions? I'll give you a minute or so to look at it because you, as you say. L19, top of the next page. L153 on the top of the next page. Sorry? Yes. Yes, Marnie.
How's L153?
Has that gone down or not? Sorry. Who's answering that one?
Very underreported. So it's always
always quite a difficult one. I think it's quite sensitive around those figures as well.
I think I, through you, Chair, I think I read somewhere that the more serious cases of antisocial behaviour are now treated as a crime, and therefore. Antisocial behaviour, some of the more serious incidents have been bumped up by the police to a crime. So that might drop down the antisocial behaviour numbers, but increase the number of crime incidents.
And also, for example, stalking and harassment has come out of antisocial behaviour and now is a crime type of its own. But also, these reported incidents of domestic abuse, these police figures, and these are, they categorise it differently. These are crimes only. So it's not, this isn't all reported domestic abuse, it's those that have been categorised as a crime.
Emma, did you want to come in?
Yeah, that was part of my question actually. So are these reports that come through Operation Compass, or are they separate domestic abuse reporting? Because we get all the police reports under Operation Compass for the police across the buildings. We get through at school as individual reports. So I'm just wondering the changes in reporting for the police, is that like part of the change of how they're reporting the criminal domestic abuse reports?
Of course. Yeah, and what I can do is just get some clarity on this, because there's been changes through a lot of the crime types. And to be honest, I don't want to misquote what's come out of where, but I can get those figures.
That's where we get our figures from for domestic abuse incidents that affect children. So where there's been a police call out to a property, it's logged under Operation Compass, which then triggers a series of reports in terms of domestic violence happening in a home. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if there's been changes around that reporting that might have changed.
I'll find out. But this won't just be around children, this will be.
Yes, we just ignore the effect on children.
Right. Okay. And the next thing, the last page on that is for the full council, so we don't discuss that one. Right, so now we move on to the business planning report, which is just a rundown of what we've been doing over the last 12 months and that. So that's page 12 and page 13 of the agenda. Thank you for that, Victoria. And then we're on to the work programme. And we know it's owned by the committee, so if anybody's got any comments, please voice it now. I mean, we've got some. Check that 22nd, this is on page 19 now. The work programme, 22nd of August, has been changed to September the 19th. I don't know if you're all aware of that. So, and also, I've had discussions with Gabriella Whitehouse about the food hygiene rating system. I think there's a bit of concern with the food businesses out there as to what they expect from council and what the council expect. So she's putting out a consultation, I do believe. Tommy, if I'm wrong, I know you probably know a bit more about it than I. Sorry, a bit more about it than I do. But she's putting some sort of consultation out to the food businesses and that, as to whether they have a power, shall we say, and they come along and that the council put forward what they expect of businesses, and they can put their comments forward. Because I think, you know, it would help. I don't think we've ever done that, so I think that would be quite good. Did you want to come in, Anna?
I was just going to say, yes, I think she's doing a piece of work, and it could be that better maybe gets moved back to be discussed as a result of that. But I can speak to Gabrielle and let me know.
Yeah, thank you for that. Has anybody got any more comments on the work programme? Yes,
Lee. Only a quick one, just to say that we are now in for the September meeting with the Veolia annual report.
It's in the September meeting?
Yeah,
I've got that bit, yeah.
You agree to that, Chair?
Yeah.
That will lighten the agenda slightly for November there, rather than having the Freedom Leisure annual report and the Veolia annual report.
Yeah, the Freedom Leisure coming in November.
Yeah, Freedom Leisure to November.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. Thank you. Has anybody else got any comments on the work programme or anything they want to bring forward?
You just mentioned a change in date chair, which was it?
September the 19th.
I'm going to send out, I am going to send out an email to all members about it. I didn't want to confuse people by thinking that this one was cancelled. So I will send something out. The August one is now in September, 19th of September.
Yeah. And don't forget, we've discussed in the past about if we're going to task and finish on food waste, if you remember.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a while ago we discussed that, but again, you know, it's something. Josh, do you want to comment on that, please?
Thank you. So we've now legislation in the past where we will be looking forward, like the first discussion, we will be required to do weekly food waste collection from March 2026. So what we're looking at the moment is, as part of the waste team, is how we're going to do that going forward. Historically not being overly popular with residents, but we've introduced the one authority within Staffordshire that does at the moment, which is Newcastle. I think a lot of things in waste, people get used to it after a period of time, so we've got to do it, we've got no choice around it. But what we proposed to do, and we talked about previously, was having get something about a working group, talk to members, and then to come back to this committee report. I'm quite happy if we can fit in a presentation to one of the meetings as well, to do a presentation for myself and Liam. Becky and others will do a presentation around it and what our thoughts are going forward. We've got some really good case data from Newcastle and the Lion. They've been doing it for a number of years, last 14 years in fact, they were there today. And we know, Liam himself know Andrew Burr really well, who's the director up there, who's rolled out their system over the years. So we've got some good intelligence within Staffordshire, and it's something we've all got to do. So it'd be great to just get students opinion on to help us build that service going forward.
Thank you very much for that, Josh. And I think, you know, we'll have to have a conversation about when we should think we should start to task and finish, and that, and we'll put it out to the members of the committee who wants to be on it, who wants to be involved. So that's something. And the other thing is, Anna Cookery, have I said that right? Cookery? Is that something that you're
cooking?
Cookering. Oh. Sorry.
Okay, it is an issue that we're seeing at the moment. At the present time, it's not really appropriate for further work from elected members into it while we're trying to resolve the number of issues. But going forward, it's something I can keep in mind, see if there's a role that elected members could possibly play in trying to find solutions for this.
Okay, all right. Marnie, you're looking a bit, yeah, I think you might have to explain what that's about. I'm sorry.
Sorry, what was the question?
No, she's looking a bit bemused then, I could see.
What is it?
Yeah.
Okay. It is one, when there is a vulnerable person in a property and the house gets taken over by a number of other people as well.
Thank you. Right, I think we've come with no more comments on the work programme. Yeah, everybody's quite happy. Yeah. Well, I'll bring the meeting to a close and say thank you very much to everybody that's attended. Thank you for your comments and your questions and that. I'm sure it's been quite informative. And thank you to the officers for giving you time as well. Thank you very much. Thank you. Good night, everybody, and safe journey home.